Hi, this is Michael Senoff with HardToFindSeminars.com. You are in for a treat. The old rules to making money in the marketing consulting business just don't apply when you hear these stories. Right now, I've got Richard to spill the beans on all the inside secrets of marketing consulting. In the next two-part interviews, 60 minutes, you'll hear real marketing consulting case studies from Richard's real clients. Other so-called marketing consultants will tell you their stories of others, but none of their own. This is different. The best way to learn how to be a successful marketing consultant is to hear exactly how the expert's doing it. You'll want to hear what Richard does in his practice today. Get ready as I dig out all the goods from Richard's proprietary marketing consulting methods. Now you'll learn how to do it by example in this two-part recording called Marketing Consulting Client Case Studies. Enjoy.
I thought what I might is illustrate what's happening with these clients because it demonstrates the unique selling proposition of the system. And that is that it's a marketing system that's unique because it not only increases sales for a client, but also net profit, profit margin, bottom line profits go up. Working capital is freed up, and it can happen in as little as 60 to 90 days for a client or quicker, and it can mean a 25 to 100% increase in all of those. And it's a system, so it's step by step, easy to execute, and you guarantee the system's performance. So that's the unique selling proposition for the system. That's what sets it apart from everything else out there. So that's why a consultant can go with confidence in approaching prospects because he's got something different and unique. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely.
So all of these stories, you need to see what's happening is we're not just increasing sales. These are profits going to the bottom line. Because as you go through the stories, we didn't increase the money spent to create those results. We didn't have to do more advertising. We didn't have to hire more people. We didn't have to go to more trade shows. And so we're freeing up capital because we're better allocating the scarce resource. And that's so important. And that's what's so neat about this system is because it leverages these hidden marketing assets in a way that you can create these results without asking your client to spend huge amounts of money, except which, of course, to pay you.
So, that's fair, though.
That's fair enough. And so the client still gets all that return for years to come. That's important because that's the unique selling proposition for the system.
You've got a collection of past clients, and you're going to discuss some stories of impact stories with specific examples of the marketplace.
That's right.
Well, let's start with number one, see what we got.
Well, this first story happens to also be the first client that I charged a fee for. As I was starting my career and got my training with Jay, of course, Jay Abraham's approach was the contingency-based, and that was difficult in starting my consulting practice. And so I got referred to a small clothing store in Elko, Nevada in 1990. They were doing about $500,000 a year. And I went in and met with them once a week for a period of weeks implementing the marketing system.
What was it, like a women's clothing?
No, it was more of a Western outdoor clothing.
And they had a retail, physical brick and mortar.
Uh-huh. Doing about $500,000 a year in business.
So you were referred to them by?
By an associate. So I charged this client $500 a day. That was my first fee-based charge. And I went out to...
$500 a day?
Yes.
Well, it was a male owner or what?
A male owner, uh-huh. And he owned the store, bought it from his dad. It had been in the area a long time. I'd go out once a week and charge him $500. So that was giving me a couple $1,000s a month. And so I was on my way to fee-based business. And one thing that is a common and is that these steps in the system are in an order on purpose. They are really ordered in a way to have the most important and effective impact as quickly as possible. So we're not trying to manipulate the steps in any way. They're in an order to leverage the marketing assets of the client. So our first step in the system is developing a unique selling proposition. And a unique selling proposition, and the acronym is USP, is the number one step and first step in the marketing system, because it is essentially the sales pitch. It's the compelling selling reason that that company is in business. It is what sets that company apart, what makes that company unique from all of the competition. And it's so important, because with so many different kinds of businesses in the same business, and so here you have in Elko, Nevada, in this example, you have a clothing retailer that's trying to compete against Corral West, which was a franchise, and Walmart coming in, and all these other clothing options in a small town of Elko. He has to stand out. He has to be unique. He has to find something that will differentiate himself from his competition. And the reason he has to do that is because if people don't perceive a reason that's different to do business with you, then they're only going to shop price, and they're only going to go to the lowest price seller, and they're only going to watch for the ads that give him the lowest price. So that was the battle this store owner had. He was fighting against the lower-priced retailers of Western clothing in the area, and he had to win that battle. And in the system, you're trained how to determine a unique selling proposition. You're given four steps. And the first step is we met with the owner and his staff to get their perspective of the unique selling proposition. And in your training material, you have a complete questionnaire that goes through what questions you should ask. The next thing we did was to call some customers, survey customers. And in your training material, you're given all of the survey questions you need to ask. And we get the customer's perspective of what might be unique.
Why is that important?
Well, because they're shopping for some reason. They're coming to the store for some reason, and we want to know what that is. They're maybe going to another store as well, and we want to know that.
Can you give an example, like the Domino's Pizza example, what a couple USPs would be for companies that anyone would understand?
Yeah. The Domino's Pizza, the dramatic impact for that company, because they came out and they looked at all of the competition, and they surveyed customers, and they talked to prospects, and they asked what's most important to them. And at that time, speed was becoming and was a void in the industry. No one was delivering a pizza fast. So they did. They said, we'll get it to you in 30 minutes or less, or it's free. Well, that was very compelling. That was very unique. And it took Domino's to the top of the pizza industry.
Was their pizza any better?
No. Because what was important was speed, okay? But now, over time, that has not become and maintained itself as a unique selling proposition. Because now, people can get pizza in 20 minutes, anywhere. So it's no longer unique to Domino's. And Pizza Hut started to keep delivering a better tasting pizza. And that began to matter more than speed over time. So Domino's has lost its unique edge. Revenues are down. Domino's struggling. They have to create a new unique selling proposition. But it sure raised the bar for everybody. Now we can go anywhere and get pizza in less than 30 minutes. And good tasting pizza. And it was profitable. Another good example is LensCrafters. LensCrafters looked around at the industry and they said, oh, you know, people want glasses fast and there's no one doing it. So we're going to build the lab right in the store, and we're going to deliver in about an hour. Well, that's a very compelling, unique selling proposition. And it's got LensCrafters at the top of the industry. No one's matched it. No one's done better. And so it continues to be an effective, unique selling proposition. Another good example is the battle today between Walmart, Target, and Kmart. Kmart is pulling out of bankruptcy, while Target can build a store right next to Walmart. Why can that happen? It's because Target has a different, unique selling proposition than Walmart. Walmart is appealing to a low-price audience. They want low prices always. They communicate that USP over and over again, while Target does not. Target goes after an income level demographic higher than Walmart. They build a nicer store than Walmart. They have wider aisles. They have a little nicer product line. And so Target's doing very well building their store right next to Walmart because they're going to a unique demographic than Walmart. So there was a USP not in product, but in who they were targeting. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So there's what we mean by unique selling proposition, is a very targeted reason that people should do business with you and no one else. And so with this clothing store in Elko, we determined that they carried a nicer line of product, so that we knew we couldn't be a low-price leader. And we also determined that they carried the largest selection of product. And so now we even counted the number of winter coats they carried and quantified this selection as a unique selling proposition. So we crafted the USP around a higher line and the largest selection in town. So that was the first thing we had to do. The second thing we did was make sure that message gets integrated into all of their marketing. That's step number two in the system.
So where did you integrate that higher selection, better quality?
Okay, it starts first with the salespeople on the floor. So we did some training to make sure we got scripting into their sales pitches. So when people come in the store, the first thing that they're telling these people is why they're shopping there at the store. Well, we do have the largest selection of these higher-end, better-quality clothing lines. No one else in Elko has them. Well, that all of a sudden started to close more business. People started to buy more in the store. And we got it integrated in their newspaper ads that they were running in their local paper. We got it integrated into the radio ads that were running in the local radio station. We got this message integrated through scripting and through copy work. And you're trained in step number two how to do that. So that was the second most important thing. It's silly to have a unique selling proposition, and it won't do any good unless it's communicated over and over and over again.
And it's got to be done first.
That's right.
You could be just wasting your time.
That's exactly right. You could be running radio ads without a USP wasting money, and newspaper ads without a USP wasting money. And that's what these businesses do, is they get out advertising that emphasizes price, so they get mad when all they're selling is product with no margin. So a USP gives them a different message to sell. And that's why steps one and two are where they're at, because it's silly to pursue steps three through seven unless one and two are done.
What was the results for this clothier?
I'll share one more thing that we did. What happened then is Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait right in the middle of our consultation with this clothing. The very month I was going to Elko, Saddam decided to invade. Mm-hmm. No one came into the store and traffic dropped in half. This store owner said to me, "Richard, I'm going to go out of business if you don't help me with something here. I don't care if I got a great USP. I don't care if I got people that are hearing it on the radio. They're not coming in. They're all home watching CNN because it was the first time that the networks were publicizing a war and putting it on the screen." So his traffic dropped in half. So I said, "Okay, then what we need to do is do better with who is coming in the store. What is your average sale right now?" And he calculated that his average sale was $25. So we did some training with the salespeople. We took some of his product line and built packages, and we raised his average sale to $50.
Mm-hmm.
We were able to double his sales with half the people. That saved him during that invasion. That kept him in business. And so the message is that when you're with a client that's in a hard time, or the economics and the situation is such that the shopping just isn't being done, the place to turn to is the customers that are coming in anyway and doing a better job or getting more money from half of the business that's coming in. So that was a dramatic impact on that store. And we took him from $500,000 to $850,000 in a year.
Did he stick with you through all the steps?
You bet. Yeah, we got into step three, which is database. And we reactivated customers. We got his customers onto a mailing list. And we sent offers. And he created a frequent shopper customer club where the minute somebody spent over $500 in this club, they got $50 worth of merchandise free. That had so much impact. It kept his loyal customers coming back and coming back and coming back. So we did some great things in step number three. Step number four is we started to put some cross-promotion pieces with other stores in the Elko area that had the same kinds of customers that he would want. For example, there was a Red Wing shoe dealer in the area, and we would have a special that would go to the Red Wing shoe customers over to this retail store outlet. And that brought in new customers in a different way without advertising more. We did the media, step five, as we talked about, getting the USP integrated into his radio and into his newspaper. He did step six, community marketing, was a big part because Elko's a small town. He was sponsoring snowmobile trips. He was sponsoring outdoor activities. And he would take some of his clothing up to these spots and serve coffee and hot chocolate. And he was sponsoring the event.
Mm-hmm.
So he was out in the community making people aware of his store and of his higher-end clothing lines. So, yeah, there were all the steps involved in that first client had a dramatic impact.
And he was probably having fun doing it.
Oh, it was a blast, especially when the war ended and his traffic picked back up.
That's great. That's a great illustration. Is he still around today?
He's still around, doing well.
Do you keep in touch with him?
You bet.
Great story.
Yeah.
Let's do another.
I want to talk about a catering business. He was doing about $300,000 a year in catering, and he was located in the Salt Lake City, Utah area.
How were you introduced to him?
My direct marketing contacted.
So you're a phone guy. This is your phone guy, called this guy cold, set up an appointment, and you went through the opportunity analysis.
Exactly.
Then he said, let's do it.
That's right. Well, the most important thing that the training gives a consultant is teaching you how to spot the hidden marketing assets that an owner may not. And so a typical owner, and this was the case with this catering, I go in, he's doing about $300,000 to $350,000 a year, and he says, I need more customers. And I said, well, how are you getting customers now? He says, well, I have the largest Yellow Page ad in the Yellow Page book, so I have a full page ad. I said, well, how does that do? He says, oh, I'm getting calls every day. Well, that was a clue to me. Did he really need more customers? So what we did in this one was simply fix and tweak an existing marketing process that was already in place but was generating assets he was not leveraging. He really didn't even need a unique selling proposition, although we went ahead and developed one. But the most important thing that he wasn't doing was capturing every phone call and following up on every inquiry from the Yellow Pages.
Who was answering the phone over there?
He was, which was the mistake, because he was also cooking. He was also the caterer. So I convinced him to go ahead and hire someone. That's all they did was answer the phone and follow up with prospects that inquired about his catering. And that is all we did for that client, taking him from $350,000 to $700,000 in a year.
You started with step one, right?
Yeah, we always look at the USP first.
So he paid for his step one.
That's right.
And at what step was this implemented in?
And then step two is, again, integrating the USP into the current selling and marketing process. That's where this was, because the phone ringing was his current process. So we got somebody to answer that phone, integrate and give the scripting of the USP over the phone, and he started to close more of his Yellow Page calls. It illustrates that you don't always have to fix a whole lot. All we did on this one was fix the sales process already.
And he couldn't see it.
He couldn't see it. So the message to consultants prospects out there that are looking at the program is that the USP for the program is training you how to spot these hidden marketing assets.
I would think these things are going to jump out at you when you go through that opportunity analysis worksheet.
That's right. That's exactly why we created that worksheet, was to help you as a consultant see these assets and help the business owner see them, because they're the ones that are usually missing them.
Okay, that's excellent. That would be related to increasing conversion.
Yes, that's right. See, because Seven-Step Marketing System grows a business three ways. Increases the number of prospective clients, increases the conversion rate of prospective customers to paying customers, and increases the value of each customer. So you recall back to the clothing store, we didn't have a chance to increase the number of people coming in the store because of the war. So we had to go to step three and increase the value of each customer and raise the ticket from $25 to $50, and that survived the business. The second case, the caterer, we had plenty of prospects coming in the door. He couldn't take any more. He was too busy as it was. Well, a traditional advertiser or a traditional marketing consultant would have come in and said, well, we've got to get the phone to ring more. You need a bigger Yellow Page ad, or you need more newspaper ads, or you need to be on the radio, which is just exactly opposite of what this business needed. They needed training in step number two, which was a better handling of every inquiry coming in. And so you can see the beauty in the flexibility of the system is it allows the consultant to go where the opportunity is the greatest and provide the most value to your client.
That's great.
Oh, here's a great one. Here's an attorney in the Salt Lake, Utah area.
Were all your clients in that area?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You're working right in your backyard.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's what we want consultants to do, enjoy their backyard. So my travel is minimal, and my, you know, expenses are minimal. The moving parade principle is critical here, and that is just because they might not need you today, you want to stay in touch, and you want to stay in contact, because they might need you tomorrow. A business that starts business 5 years ago is now a prospect for me. And there's always new businesses starting every day. So your own backyard is where the diamonds are.
Okay, let's do it.
This is an attorney. He gives seminars.
How'd the contact happen?
I wanted to do seminars, and I was looking through the Yellow Pages for a seminar company. And I ran into this company that titled by a seminar name. In reality, it was an attorney that was going around giving seminars on asset protection. And his client base was doctors, dentists, high-income professionals who needed to have their assets protected through legal channels.
So did you call him cold out of the yellow?
I did. I called him up and said, I'd like to look at doing seminars with you. And it ended up that didn't work out, but he retained me as a consultant. We went in, and again, his USP was in his expertise. We knew right off the bat he had had 20 years in the business. He was well-respected around the country. He was a nationally renowned speaker. He used direct mail to get people into his seminar. I remember meeting with him, going through the opportunity analysis. And I asked him, I said, so how many people come to your seminar? And he says, well, I do about three seminars a week. I get about 500 people total during the week. I said, well, that's good. I said, of the 500, how many buy your asset protection package? He said, well, I'm a pretty good closer on the seminar circuit. I close about 30%. So I said, all right, so that means about 150 are buying your package. He says, that's right. And then because of the training, I asked this question. I said, so what about the other 350 that didn't buy? He said, well, I don't know. What can I do with them? I don't do anything with them right now. So here I am trained to spot that as a hidden marketing asset. And he said, wow, that's interesting. I'm already spending the money for those 350. So he says, what do you suggest, Richard? And so we implemented a back-end marketing program. So this is really step number three, database marketing. We got all of those 350 prospects, and we developed and trained a call center of two or three salespeople who would call back the 350 prospects the next day or two after the seminar and invite them to buy the package over the phone. This got this attorney $1 million cash in a year that he never seen before.
Wow, that's great.
That was nice because I did some of that on contingency. I could see the opportunity. I knew what was going to happen. I knew the 300, and what we found out was some of them just needed to go home and get their credit card. They didn't have it at the seminar.
All right, let's talk about that. So in your opportunity analysis, in asking questions, you saw what this could mean. You had enough experience to know what kind of dollars this was going to bring on.
That's right.
Now, let's say a consultant sees an opportunity like that, but the business owner has no clue. What are you going to say to try and lock in a contingency? Can you give an example with that specific case study?
Yeah, what you would do is you would try to convince him and persuade him to a small test. You'd say, let's just test it, Mr. Business Owner. I don't know if it'll work, but let's just test it.
How many steps did he pay for already?
Well, he'd gone through and made sure his USP message was right, so he paid me for that.
Mm-hmm.
We determined that I couldn't help him a whole lot on the front end where he was the presenter in closing.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing pretty well there. So we were big on this part, which was the prospects that didn't buy. Okay, so he had paid me for a couple of steps, and he was paying me for the third step, and then we locked in this contingency deal as part of that third step.
So what would you say at that point when you want to lock it in? What do you say?
Say, listen, why don't we go ahead and we'll cut what you pay me in half, and let me just take a commission on each of the sales made.
You remember what he said?
He said, sure, absolutely.
Did you draw up an agreement or a letter of agreement?
Uh-huh. And it's a commission agreement, and it was based on the phone people that I had trained and that I had. So it was very measurable because
mm-hmm.
we knew we weren't going to mess with the sales he made in the seminar. So these were all incremental sales that he had never, ever looked at.
Can I ask you what you asked for in commission?
It was 10% on every sale.
Okay. That's easy for him to say yes. That's no big deal.
Sure.
So you put a time limit on the agreement.
That's right, and they'll want to.
Or what would happen? What do you think? They get resentful?
Yeah.
Deal falls apart?
Yeah.
So you would recommend if someone's going to set up a contingency with someone, avoid that and be fair and set a time limit on it.
Yes.
Don't lock them in for life.
Yes. Unless you want to become part of the company.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there's some reason you want to become an associate with your client and stay with him long term, that's a different story. But maybe you do that after a couple of years with him. I had no interest in becoming a long-term partner.
Okay. That's a great illustration.
Yes, a great story. And, again, the importance of being able to identify these hidden assets. Because I tell the clients that I don't know which step of the system or which combination of steps is going to generate the increases. And so I need to do all of these steps, the ones I'm recommending. And they understand that. Let's go to a manufacturer. This company manufactures clips that go on the siding of houses to clip cable to the house. So your Sprint people, your Comcast people, those, the installers of cable, are the customers of this company.
How'd you find them?
A referral through an alliance partner that I have.
Mm-hmm. Can you explain that?
Yeah. About 3 years ago, I came in contact through a client with a manufacturing nonprofit group who is set up by the federal government and have offices in every state. And their job, as assigned by the government, is to help small manufacturers become more profitable. So this manufacturing group I got in contact with by way of another client, and I met with them, and I helped that group increase its business. And then they contract with me to work all of their manufacturing clients that need marketing help.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a great alliance for 2 years now. I'm not an employee. They just contract with me. And it's an 80-20 split. So I pay them 20% of the fees, and then I get 80%. So this company was referred to me by this manufacturing group, and they manufactured these clips for cable. I met with the owner and the person he had running the company, and they were doing about $15,000 a quarter in business. So that's about $5,000 a month, not doing real well. We created a unique selling proposition, and then we integrated the unique selling proposition again into the person handling the phone call inquiries, and then we created a mailing piece, a combination of step 3 and 7, going out to his customers and to prospective customers, some direct marketing. And in 90 days, we had them doing $55,000 a quarter.
That's great. How were they getting their existing customers?
People were finding them on the website and calling to order clips. But what this owner was doing, or the guy running the company, was saying, yeah, I've got clips, but he wasn't telling them the USP.
Were they a commodity?
That's right. They were perceived as a commodity. We had to change that perception. And one of the attributes that this clip company had, and all of their clips, compared to the competition, was it was much easier to use the clips, much easier to install, easier to maintain, easier to replace. Well, we started getting that phone script into those inquiries, and his conversion rates again doubled, raising his revenue. And so once again, very simple, but steps 1 got to be done, steps 2 got to be done, and then that gives you the ability then to get more steps from the client.
Did you take them through all the steps?
No, just 4 steps.
You're not going to take a client through all the steps in all the cases?
That's correct. And I would say there's probably a pretty good rule that the smaller the company, the fewer steps. The larger the company, the more steps. Because the marketing's more complex. The marketing's more involved.
I bet these guys just thank you up and down.
Oh, they do.
They think you walk on water.
They do.
I mean, you've changed their lives, their families, and that's a good feeling.
It is. It is. I'll tell you one story that, and all of the consultants will get a little opportunities like this. I had a neighbor that came by, and he knocked on my door, and he said, Richard, I understand that you're in marketing. I said, yes. He says, well, I need you to know I can't pay you anything, but could you help me? I said, sure, I'd be happy to help you. He said, I'm starting a carpet cleaning. I've got my truck. I've got my equipment. I'm only doing $100, $200 a week, so I'm really suffering here. Is there anything you can do to help me? I said, well, what are you doing now to get business? And he showed me a little 4x6, 5x8 flyer that he would take and hand out to homes. Well, without going through the steps of a USP, because I knew he couldn't pay me to do that, I just created one, and we changed the flyer. The flyer was 3 rooms, $49.95.
Selling on price.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So what I recommended to him is I said, why don't you give them the 4th room free? So do 3 rooms with me, get the 4th room free. Well, he handed out 800 flyers the first time and got one call. He handed out 800 with this unique selling proposition and got 15 calls. He's making $1,000 a week now. Just changed his life overnight.
Did you have an instinct that that would pull from some prior experience?
Yes. I knew that free always is a good, compelling reason to buy. That works very well. But it also has been combined. I've used it with other packaging offers. And so he had this package for $49.95. And the reason I convinced him of it, I said, listen, you're already in the house, and so it's not going to take you long to add another room. And he said, that's right. It's not a big deal. So we went with it, and his life's changed. So, yeah, there's that satisfaction as a marketing consultant, the way that you can impact lives and businesses.
That's great. Is he still going today?
He's still going today.
All right, that's excellent. That's a good story.
Let's illustrate one with this very large manufacturing company, a public company, doing over $300 million a year.
How'd you find them?
Again, they were referred by my manufacturing alliance. And this is a great story because a big, large public company, there's some dynamics that as a consultant you encounter that you don't encounter with a small company. You have different levels of decision-making. It's usually a little longer sales cycle to get the deal closed. You invoice them, and then they pay you. And so it's a little different dynamics than you might have with a small company.
Where were you when the call came in? Who called you from the company? What position were they in?
They called me because the manufacturing group that I was associated with recommended that they call me to help them with some marketing issues. This manufacturing group, they have their own assessment, and so they're going in making assessments with clients, and during that assessment, the need came out for marketing. And so here was a division manager, the manager over commercial product applications for this large public company, called me and said, Richard, we'd like to meet with you because we're introducing a new product to the medical industry, and we want to know how we should best do that. So they made product already to the military, was a big customer of theirs, and they now wanted to take this same product and apply it to the medical field in a commercial application. So we met, they paid me for step one, they paid me for step two, they paid me for step three, they paid me for step four. This was a little division. They had one salesperson that was responsible for getting this product out to medical companies.
Let me interject. Now, you've got a huge company here. You know they got money. You're not dealing with mom and pop down the street. What's your decision-making process of what to charge this guy?
Well, I knew that they could pay more, and so I charged more, $4,000 a step. I knew that they might call me later on down the road. So I got in the door, it was a nice fee, and we did the unique selling proposition. The one salesperson that they had before we met was doing a little bit, maybe $50,000 a year in medical sales. So we created a unique selling proposition. And what was neat about this is they were keenly the expert in what they did, and the products they developed. And so I recommended to them that we set up a newsletter. These medical clients aren't fast buyers. They have to test product. They have to get product approved by the government. And they just got to go through a lot of hoops before they can buy product. And so I knew the sales cycle wouldn't be that fast. And so I knew that we had to, what I call, drip on the prospects. So we had this company develop a newsletter that would be sent out to these prospects on a regular basis, reminding them of the expertise available. The salesperson was not doing any kind of follow-up, so we had to do a lot in step two in getting the salesperson into a selling system that was leveraged and that was accountable. And so we did all of that. He said, okay, thank you, Richard. We're all done. I'm going to call you back in a year if we want to do it for another division, so I'll see you in a year. Because he knew that the sales would take that long to develop.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a year later, he called me up. He said, let's go again. I got the data. We're over $400,000 in a year from under $50,000.
Wow.
In medical equipment. And so he said, let's do it for another division.
Who wrote the newsletter?
He did, because he has the expertise. And so right now, I'm currently retained by them working this other...
You charging them more this time?
About the same.
That's excellent.
Again, a manufacturer, and these are all different kinds of businesses. And that's what happened with this audiologist that I worked with.
How'd you get the client?
Contacted by our phone work. I went in to see him, and he showed me an advertising campaign that he had paid an ad agency $20,000 to create and to put into the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked at me and he said, Richard, I didn't get one call. So it totally failed and lost him $20,000.
Wow.
And I said, well, here's what I'd like to try and do. Number one, there's nothing in this newspaper advertising that tells me why I should come to you. There's no unique selling proposition. And so he paid me to do that, and create that. I said, next, what we'll do is I'd like to try some seminars instead of the newspaper. And so we created a seminar promotion piece that went out in the direct mail. So we decided to go direct mail rather than newspaper. And this is so important because that decision was based on the work done to create a unique selling proposition. Because in the process of step one, we determined that he was not a mass price seller of hearing aids. And if you go through your local newspaper, you're going to see tons of advertising from hearing aid companies on price. So I said, your customer is not going to be reached through the newspaper. That's for a hearing aid company that wants to mass sell hearing aids at the lowest price.
What was his unique selling proposition? How was he different?
He was different because of two or three things. One, he was the only one in the area that belonged to a national buying club that could purchase from all 32 manufacturers of hearing aids. So he had the largest selection available. Number two is he's the only one in the area that had a scheduled hearing health care plan. In other words, the customers would come to him and not just get a hearing aid, but they would actually schedule their follow-up visits for the next 2 years. And it was already scheduled in advance. So he was just a higher-end servicer. He was more of a healthcare professional, not a hearing aid dispenser. Well, you can't persuade people in a page of advertising to do that. And so it was wasting his money. So we redirected the resources, not 20,000, maybe 4,000 of it, to a direct mail seminar campaign. And we now have him doing seminars on a regular basis rather than newspaper. So we've shifted the resources to match the unique selling proposition. Because with the direct mail, I can target higher income people who respond more to a healthcare professional rather than a hearing aid dispenser.
Who are they mailing to?
They're mailing to a demographic group of 55 and 65 years of age and older.
Mm-hmm.
And a certain income level. And we bring them to a seminar and give them a free dinner. That took a little convincing. I had to help the owner understand that, listen, go ahead and buy 20 people their dinner and bring them out on an evening at 6 o'clock and be done by 7:30. And so we've tripled his business by going to the seminar route. And we've cut his expenses. Now, let me tell you where we entered now into step four. And that is, he had a neighbor that was a financial planner to seniors. And this financial planner had 1,000 clients that he had serviced over the years.
Now, step four is what?
Alliances and partnerships.
Okay.
So we're forming an alliance and partnership with this financial planner. And so the financial planner, we crafted a letter that he'd send out to his 1,000 people, inviting them to a seminar and a free dinner. Because we'd already found out that worked, yet it only cost the meal. It didn't cost anything because the alliance partner covered the cost of the mailing. And it was a much smaller, more targeted, and a endorsed mailing.
Now, was something in it for the alliance partner?
Yes. The audiologist is going to sponsor a seminar to his patients. So it works both ways. And so we were going to do another seminar after this one that we scheduled with the alliance partner, but the turnout was so great, the conversion rate so high, that my client is booked for the next 3 weeks from this endorsed seminar.
Who put together the direct mail letter?
I did.
Was that difficult?
Oh, no. No, not when you know how to do it. And that's what the system will teach you. And now we'll sponsor a seminar for the financial planner. And I went up to my client and I said, do you realize that you're going to sell probably 20 hearing aids and it's going to cost you $400?
Is the financial planner going to be your client too?
Maybe. I wanted to tell this story about the audiologist because he retains me on a monthly basis. And so residual income, that can happen that way. You can keep a client for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
He just calls me, and we just stay in touch, and I do a little bit every week for him, and he pays me on a monthly basis, and so I have an ongoing client income.
Okay, that's great.
Yeah, that's another way to work with your client. But it also illustrates, now what we're talking about is he said, you know, Richard, there's got to be other financial planners that are going to the seniors. And he's right. We'll just start finding other financial planners to do the same endorsed seminars with.
And he could do that for the rest of his life and never have to mail cold again.
And save $4,000. So again, the system not only increases sales, but frees up working capital, increases his net profits, increases his margins. The business is impacted in all ways where traditional advertising can't impact it like that. Here's a furniture company, discount furniture store.
Mm-hmm.
And my phone contacted this group. I want to illustrate this story to also illustrate an important principle, and I think I may have mentioned it in a previous interview, and that was that a startup company is hard to work with because they don't have a lot of marketing assets. Well, this was a startup when I went to meet them. He'd been in business about 3 months, so he was just getting going. Well, the reason that I went ahead and took this client is he was willing to pay me to help him build the assets. So that's important, is don't say no to a startup just because he doesn't have assets. If he has some capital and is willing to pay you as a marketing consultant to help him build up the assets, that's okay. So he did. But he was doing about $4,000 net profit a month. So he was grossing about $10,000-$12,000 in sales, keeping about a 40% margin. So I said, well, we need a unique selling proposition. So he paid me for that. I said, we need to then get it into the ads that we're doing. And he was doing some newspaper ads, and he was doing some coupon ads with the local coupon company. And I said, let's get the unique selling proposition into your son, who's running the store. He needs to be selling this with people coming into the store. And then I said, he needs to track everyone that comes in and doesn't buy, because I want him to make a follow-up phone call in 2 days and see if they're still interested and would like to buy what they were looking at. So we did really 3 steps, and we developed some letters for the customer base that they were building up. And then we did step number 4, which was alliances and partnerships, because what we did was we created a promotion piece that could be used by a title company. When people go in to sign and buy their house, they go to a title company. Well, this title company liked to reward their customers with something. So we gave them a $75 gift certificate to the furniture store. Mm-hmm. So we have a partnership going on. We have people buying new houses. What do they need?
Furniture.
So we have a title company that wants to give their customers something to say thank you for doing their closing at their title company. And the way they'll say thank you is giving them $75 value towards furniture at the store. And so now we have step number 4 in place, generating customers from a title company. So we don't have to go spend media dollars to drive people into the store. This is so important for consultants to see this. And so we're generating more traffic. We did this training of salespeople in step number 2 to convert more. Did the database, which was to send out letters, and started a customer club, a referral frequency club for his customers. And 6 months later, he's generating net profits of $12,000. So we tripled his net profit. And he's able now to keep the store open and to keep his son there running it, and they're looking to expand to get into a bigger location.
That kind of brings something up. When you're looking at a company and choosing to take one on, and you know you can grow this business from your experience, is that something you want to ask them? How much can they grow? Or
you bring up a great point. I refer to them as anti-USPs, which means, you know, can you handle this growth? Is there anything that's going to kill it? We'll create a unique selling proposition for you, but can you kill it through your operations? And so, yes, you've got to make sure that there's nothing in the other parts of the business that are going to kill this growth.
And when are you discussing that?
So you should try and spot that at the opportunity consultation.
Mm-hmm.
You should ask them, let's say if we doubled your sales, do you have the capacity to handle that with the current situation that you're in? And they might say, well, no, I'll need to hire somebody, but I can do that. In fact, I was with a prospect yesterday. They manufacture baggage for certain industries, the duffel bags, backpacks, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, well, I'm doing about $600,000 a year. And I said, well, I could see where we could get you to $800,000 to $1 million pretty quick. Can you handle that? And she said, yes, because just about 3 months ago, I contracted with a manufacturer facility that is my competitor who can handle all of my excess business.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I knew then that we'd be okay. Because I knew without that manufacturing facility, we would have buried her.
Okay, great illustration. Let's do another.
I mentioned in another interview this client, they were a very large employee leasing company. Employee leasing has been a big trend the last 10 years. They were doing about $60 million in payroll, and they were a very good progressive company. We went in and conducted the opportunity consultation, saw where I could help them. They paid me then to start implementing the marketing system. Oh, this is a good story for a couple other reasons. Part of the unique selling proposition is to get with the owner and get the owner's perspective of what is unique. So we did that. We called customers and talked to them. We look at the competition and see what they're selling. And between all of that, we write up and create a unique selling proposition. Okay, then we go to step two, integrating it. Well, he had five salespeople. So I went to the five salespeople, and I said, I want to hear your sales pitch. And in going out with those five salespeople, I never heard what the owner thought was the USP. So here we have an owner on a different page than the five salespeople. That's a problem. And what the reason it's also a problem is the five salespeople are selling a commodity just like all the other employee leasing firms. So their closing rate isn't very good. They're closing maybe about 1 out of 5. And they're closing on price. Again, how much is your health insurance? How much are you going to save me on health insurance premiums? How much is your dental insurance? And how much are you going to save? So again, it was a price issue, which illustrates the commodity approach that was being taken by these five salespeople. What we did then was take the unique selling proposition and make sure that all five salespeople were now selling that unique selling proposition. And again, in those two steps, we go from $60 million in payroll to $90 million in payroll in a year.
Wow.
And that's because we doubled the conversion rate of 20% to 40%. So he kept me on, and we went into database, step number three. We went into alliances and partnerships, step number four. We actually did a lot of media. We created new brochures. We created new radio ad campaigns. We were in the industry journals. We went to the industry trade shows and always won the number one marketing awards that were presented at the trade shows. And then here came a contingency opportunity. He called me up and he said, Richard, are you ready to leave your consulting and would you come with us full time as my chief marketing officer?
Mm-hmm.
I said, what's in it for me? He said, I don't know that I want to leave my consulting practice. And he said, well, the industry, as you know, is going through some massive changes, and we are going to be going public, and that will happen in about a year. And I'd like you as the chief marketing officer, and I'm going to give you some stock. And if the stock goes as planned and comes out public as the prices that we're planning, you'll be a millionaire. So I illustrate this story because of two things. One is it took me out of my consulting for 2 years.
Now, when was this?
This was 98.
And you became a millionaire from that one deal?
No. No, I'm illustrating this.
Okay, go ahead.
To raise some flags. It is a way a consultant can position himself into a contingency type.
What'd you say to the guy?
I said, sure, I'm going to come on board. So I come on board, and what happens is, the case, which is so typical of many entrepreneurs, he brings in a venture capital firm to give him money to go public. They begin to find out that this CEO cannot take the company public. He doesn't have the skill set. So he gets fired, and all of us get let go.
And how long did that happen after you came on?
About a year and a half.
So you weren't doing any consulting for that whole time?
No. Here I was, investing, planning to go public, and become a millionaire. I illustrate it because it did two things. It took me out of consulting. These are things often beyond a guy's control. That's what I want to illustrate. Is that a contingency puts you at risk that way.
Yeah, and promises don't pay the bill.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Okay. And so another opportunity might come along like that. But did it cost me more than it helped me? I don't know. Because they paid me well. I mean, I was paid well as chief marketing officer. And so I had nice benefits. I mean, I was a corporate man.
How'd you like it that year doing that? How'd you like it compared to your consulting practice?
Very, very, very unsatisfactory in satisfying my need to be out working with businesses.
You were trapped.
I mean, trapped.
You bit the carrot and sold your freedom for a carrot.
There you go.
That's a good lesson.
It's a great lesson. And I don't want to say that it would have necessarily been the wrong one. It may have been great.
Mm-hmm.
And so my message to all the consultants out there is, watch, keep your eye open. These opportunities are going to come along, and you just have to decide what's best for you. So a great story, and a big impact in my consulting business.
What would you tell someone who's been a corporate guy for his whole life, and this consulting system or being a marketing consultant is something that he's always wanted to go out on his own, but he's just had the fear? Talk about some of the benefits of being your own boss, having this your own business, and some of the fulfilling things that you've experienced over the years doing this.
Well, I say the number one fulfilling is the freedom of creativity. When you're your own boss and the only one you're answering to is the client, the creativity and the fun in generating that creativity is very, very fulfilling. Because if you don't perform for the client, he'll fire you. And so you're on the line. And when you're on the line, you just have to be creative. You have to be good. You have to raise your level of performance. When you're in the corporate world, you don't have to do that as much. You're held back by others that are making creative decisions. You're always fighting. You're always looking for political turf. You're always worried about who's getting credit. It's the nature of the corporate world. And I learned in that experience that the corporate world can never, ever pay you enough. They just can't. They're not set up to pay you for your individual creativity and performance. The only one that can afford to pay you that is the client. And that's the freedom of the consulting business. I started to get bored. I started to get routine. I started to get less creative. And so that's why it was unsatisfying. And why I was grateful that it finally came to an end, not in the way that it did, but that it came to an end. And it gave me the chance to get back out, get free again, and answer only to the client. and be creative again. And there's the fulfillment of your own consulting business.
Well stated. Let's do another story.
Oh, this is a great little story in your own little home community. Here's a small little mint company. They make medallions out of gold, silver, and brass, and they create incentive medallions for brokers that do premium incentives, like to Coca-Cola, to Boeing. And I was, again, referred to them by the manufacturing relationship, and they were doing about $5,000 a week in sales. A little mom-and-pop shop, and struggling. Here they were, 60 and 63-year-old couple, burdened by the fact that they have to go to business and work every day because they're in debt and because their sales aren't high enough. Yet they would like to retire. Well, again, they're looking to me to say, Richard, we need more customers. And whenever you hear that as a consultant, the first thing you want to say is, well, maybe you don't. Because let's ask the question, how well are you doing with the inquiries that you're having now? Well, as we took a look at that, we create a unique selling proposition. And then step number two is to take a look at that and say, all right, who's answering the phone? Who's answering the inquiry? And what are we doing with it? Are we following up? Are we selling the unique selling proposition? Well, the wife in this partnership was the one tasked with the sales. So she didn't even know how many calls were coming in. She didn't know how to even do a bid. She didn't know how to follow up. Yet, after a couple of weeks of measuring, we found that she was getting inquiries every day for bids.
Okay.
From website that they'd had. And yet these bids were not getting converted. She was not closing them. Because she said, Richard, I don't know what to say to them. So, based on these stories today, we now know what to say, and that's the USP. So we trained her and helped her to manage each inquiry better. And here, 3 months later, they're doing $12,000 a week. Instead of five. And it's a burden that's lifted.
Mm-hmm.
He says, you know, now when someone calls, I know what to tell them. And so it's been great. We've got them at capacity right now. They're handling enough that they've got because they're handling each inquiry well and doing well.
So how many steps have they gone through with you?
Steps is all.
And let's talk about how much time have you spent, really, if you added up to hours of time you spent with this couple?
10 hours.
10 hours total.
They've paid me $3,000.
It's a great story.
All right. I want to illustrate something that's happened this past year. Over the last year, through this relationship that I've developed with a manufacturing group as an alliance, for the first time, we've done some group training. I hadn't done that. I've always worked with clients one-on-one because I didn't know how I could do the group training profitably. Well, it so happens that in all of your states out there, in all of your communities, there are parts of the government that provide training funding for businesses and their employees. And in this particular instance, this funding is available from the state of Utah. But I didn't know about it until I got associated with my manufacturing group, who's a nonprofit group whose business is to know about these sources of funding. And so what's worked out is the manufacturing group has done the promotion in communities around my community. These are smaller, more rural communities that you could not profitably, as a consultant, work with someone one-on-one because you'd be traveling too much. So we have been able to package, and this will be included in the releases that are coming out in the updates of the system, but we've been able to package group training now. And so I did four of these group trainings, training about 80 to 100 business owners and employees this past year.
About 80 at a time?
About 20 at a time. We're training them in two-hour increments. So I'll go to the area for 2 hours and come home.
All right.
And train them all at that location.
on how to build their business using this system.
That's right. And each of those training sessions has been worth about $10,000.
For 2 hours?
For about 2 times 7 weeks, 6 weeks, about 12 hours. What is exciting is these business owners who never, ever could afford to pay someone one-on-one what I would need to be paid, they get funding from the state at $500 an employee, and they have to pay $125 of that. So the government funded $375 of the $500, yet I got paid the $500 per employee. Every state has some of this type of funding. It might be through their economic development centers. This one was called Custom Fit for Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to encourage your consultants to understand that here's a new way to deliver this system, and that is through government-funded training, because that way they can get paid what they need to get paid, but they'll be able to attract businesses that couldn't afford to pay them otherwise.
And does this state pay them quickly?
Oh, yeah.
Who pays you?
Well, it happens that the manufacturing group is the one that gets paid first, and then they turn around and pay me.
Do you have to wait for your money after the training?
30 days.
That's fantastic.
And that way, you're just simply delivering the steps differently than if you were one-on-one.
So if someone signs on, goes through your system, this is just one way of them earning income.
That's right. And it increased my income $40,000, $50,000 this year.
Yeah.
Because I hadn't done it before.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never done this group training. I had never found these sources of government funding that are available. And so we want the consultants to be aware of that.
How do you prepare for a training like that? You've got 20 people. You're going to handle all this. What are you going to print out? What are they going to walk home with? How do you do this?
They're getting the 7 steps modules that have been prepared for the web and that are now available in manuals. What we've done is we've written and taken the 7 steps and turned it into a self-study course by the business owner. So as a consultant, all you got to do is go through those manuals.
When you're doing your presentation, are you using a projector or anything?
I'm using sometimes my laptop with the seminar, the PowerPoint seminar material that's going to be available to the consultant.
So you've got this thing all on PowerPoint?
Yes.
You're just doing your PowerPoint presentation and walking them through it?
Yeah.
And you've got this PowerPoint presentation ready?
That's right. So as a consultant, you're going to have the manuals. You're going to be able to use those and make that part of your group training. And it's simply set up so that the business owner himself can take himself through the system and doesn't require a consultant to do it for him. This next case study revolves around a financial planning firm. They were doing about $3.5 million a year in business. Their target market was a wealthy individual who was on the verge of selling their business and retiring. And so they were going to come into a lot of money, a lot of assets.
Mm-hmm.
And this financial planning firm then would sell financial plans for those types of people. So the customer was a typical business owner who was had their business for about 20 years and was on was selling it and coming into a lot of money. And when I met them and visited with them, and this was a fellow I'd worked with previously in my outside sales days, he called me up out of the blue and said, I've started a financial planning firm, and I want you to come and help me with some marketing. So that's how I got this client. We went in and found out they were generating their prospects and their leads through advertising in a very high-end periodical magazine. And these ads would cost about $10,000 a piece to run. So I took a look at the ads and realized that there really wasn't a unique selling proposition in the ads. So again, that's the first place we look and we fix, is we create a unique selling proposition for them. And then we put that into the ads. And in this case, they were just advertising financial planning. But what we did was find out that the work they did would actually lower taxes by 50% or more for these clients. So we started to be more specific in the ads, and we started to say, lower your taxes 50% or more. Well, this doubled the response on the ads. So that's the situation of taking a USP and getting it integrated right into the ads. So we didn't have to spend more ads. We just did a better job. Then we had a group of contracted, independent salespeople out in the field. And these people were just kind of loose out there. They were under contract where they got a commission for developing a financial plan. And what had happened is these prospects would come into Salt Lake City and meet with the company there in Salt Lake City. Well, by getting some of these salespeople out in the field, the clients could meet with them in their region and in their area. So we were able to service more clients by setting up these outside salespeople who were qualified. Some were attorneys, some were CPA background, some were insurance background, but we could train them enough to sell the financial planning that we had. By leveraging the salespeople out in the field, we set up a selling reporting system that required them to send in their contacts, send in what they were doing with their leads and how well they were doing with their leads that we would give them from the advertising that we would generate. Tied down the sales process better. We had a real big push in alliances and partnerships. We found out that the conversion rate would increase if we brought the CPA in with the business owner. We were finding that we would propose a financial plan and that they would go to their CPA and it would get killed by the CPA. So we just simply started bringing the CPA with the client, treating them as a valued advisor partner from the beginning. So our conversion rate started to go up. We started to do a little bit more community marketing in the areas of these salespeople doing seminars and workshops. And so over a year, we took them from $3 million to $7.5 million by those steps of the system.
That's fantastic.
Another great story and a great use of all steps of the system. Media was big because they were spending large on media. Community was improved because we'd have salespeople in the local regional area. Direct marketing was used because we would send out, beyond the media, we'd send out a newsletter and direct mail pieces to prospects. So there's a case where all seven steps of the system were implemented.
I hope this recording has been some of the best marketing advice you've heard in a long time. Richard's proven system of uncovering hidden marketing assets in a business is based on his 15 years of marketing consulting, and it works. Whether you're a new business looking for a way to systematize your marketing, or if you want to be a marketing consultant helping small to medium-sized businesses while making a very comfortable income working part-time from home, Richard's system can shortcut the learning process for you. For more information on Richard's marketing system, call 858-274-7851. That's 858-274-7851.